You are listening to the Horse Radio Network, part of the Equine Network family.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
You are listening to the number one horse podcast in the world. Here's your entertaining look at the horse world and the people in it.
I am Coach Jen from Ocala, Florida.
And I'm Mary Kitzmiller from Kemp, Texas, and you are listening to Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network for March 5th, episode 3896, Good Morning Horse World.
Good morning, Mary. Introduce us to the soft, furry canine that's on your lap right now.
I knew she would start up as soon as it was time to do the show. So I am actually sitting on my bed because I'm locked in my room with my computer because my noisy dogs are in the other room in their crates. And I don't want them to cause a ruckus. So I have my dog Magpie, who's this, she's supposed to be a Chihuahua, but she looks more like a footstool. she's like that dog in Beauty and the Beast that's like a footstool throughout most of the movie. And she expresses herself by oinking. And so she's woken up and is gently oinking. Yes.
Aww, and I'm like, so
if she's too annoying, I can punt her across the room. No problem.
does she have the classic Chihuahua attitude?
No. She is a sweet angel on earth. She is the best dog. She's my daughter, actually. She's just my most cherished, weird little dog.
So she's the teacher's pet, that one.
Yes. She has never done anything in her life wrong in her life ever.
Oh, I love it. Well, welcome to the show, Magpie. We are glad that you stopped by and we will enjoy your vocalizations throughout.
Awesome. So she appreciates it.
So for folks who haven't stopped by recently or never stopped by to visit with us here on the Mary Kitzmiller training episode, Mary stops by the first Thursday of every month, and we chit-chat about all things horse training, and we answer questions submitted by listeners. But the other thing we do is we get to enjoy the benefits of Mary's wisdom because she provides us a training tip each month. So this is the point where we do that. So what is the training tip and what inspired it?
So the training tip this week is something that I learned when I was working in reining barns. And it's pretty much inspired by it's show season here. It's getting ready to ramp up. And so my training is getting a little more intense as we're trying to get certain maneuvers down pat and everything. So at the reining barns, we were preparing all of these young horses for the futurity, which was like this huge deal. It's a lot of work for a three-year-old to go through. And us assistant trainers sometimes get tunnel vision and just want to drill and drill and drill and drill, you know, because maybe the lead changes aren't just quite right. So we have to keep working on them until they're perfect or we're having trouble with spins or yada, 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 yada. And our boss from time to time would have to tell us to calm down and it was more important to work on the horse's mind than to drill on any specific maneuver. So, you know, he would tell us, go take that horse outside, pitch the reins away, and just ride him around for a day or two. And when you're in that tunnel vision, it's really hard to do that because you're like, but, you know, we keep messing up our lead departures. You know, it's not perfect yet. So we have to do it. And, you know, the boss understood that if you kept drilling and drilling and drilling like that, you're going to fry that horse's poor little brain. So every once in a while, if you're really focused on something in particular, or you feel your horse is getting maybe agitated or nervous or shut down, take them out in the pasture and just ride around on a loose rein. It's not a wasted ride. It's part of training. You're training their mind. And, you know, especially if you ride Western, sometimes it's good just to pitch that horse away, meaning, you know, give him a nice big loose rein like you're going to do in the show pen, and just, you know, let them carry themselves and steer them around and let it be a short, uneventful, easy ride and make it a good win for both of you.
Ooh, interesting. So let me toss a scenario your way. You have a horse who is worked a lot in the arena, but for the most part, when it's under saddle, it's, I'm going to use my air quotes, it's working. And you very rarely throw the reins away, just let them go on a long, loose, loopy rein, because every time you do that, they act stupid.
Mm-hmm,
what
mm-hmm.
does that tell you about the horse's frame of mind and the training system you're using?
That tells me that that horse is overly dependent on me micromanaging them and like trying to hold them together. I don't have a problem with riding on contact a lot. You know, I know, especially in the English world, that's what you do with some exceptions. You know, it's okay to ride your horse on contact, but if I am noticing that anytime I loosen those reins, my horse is acting silly, that tells me I've got a pretty big hole in the basics of my riding, and I need to kind of put everything else on a shelf, and we need to work on letting that horse have security, even if I'm not holding them in place all the time. And so how do I do that? For instance, I had a horse the other day who went through this exact same thing. We were outside. I was working on something, and I noticed that he really wasn't listening to my hands. And when I would give him some rein, he would want to go faster, stick his head up. And so I just put everything else I was working on the side, because he's not right in the brain. And if he's not there with me mentally, then it doesn't matter about the other stuff I was working on. So what I do with horses like that is I give them the rein and trust them to be a good horse. And even if I'm pretty sure after five strides, they're going to, you know, pick up their pace and run forward and act the fool, I'm still going to give them the chance to be good. As soon as they feel like they're scared or rushing or agitated or whatever, instead of gathering them all the way back up with both my hands and putting them back on contact, I typically do something laterally with one rein. So that could be a one rein stop. That could be bending them in a circle. I love doing bending transitions. So the other day I had a horse that was really unsettled by some cattle in the field next over. In the field across the street. And anytime, you know, I'm trying to get him to come back down to earth, anytime his head shot up and he felt silly, instead of grabbing two reins and trying to pull him back into frame, I would just bend him in a, you know, nice supple circle around my leg at the walk, or even the trot if they're pretty hyped up. And I would keep them in that circle and be real gentle with them until they settled down. Every time he felt like he relaxed and he slowed down again, I would give him the reins again and act like you're going to be a good boy and let him walk forward on a loose rein. Anytime I felt him get agitated again, I'd spin him in a circle the other way. And we did that for a good solid 10 to 20 minutes of just bend this way, loose rein. Okay, bend that way, loose rein. Toward the end of the exercise, I was able to walk him several feet on a loose rein. And then he would go, oh, no, I decided I'm nervous again. Okay, let's bend the other way. And so that's what I would work on that horse for however long it takes. And it's very gentle. You don't want to be quick with your hands. You want to be ready, because if it is a horse that's maybe thinking of running off or something really serious, you want to be on the ready to gather up the reins and manage your horse. But you also want to be very fluid with your hands. And you're like calm, you're the voice of reason. So anytime my horse gets unsettled, I'm bending him right away, but my hands are very fluid. And I'm like, hey, buddy, just come on back down. Let's go back into our little circle. And I like doing something lateral because if things get really scary, I'm already halfway to a one rein stop by doing that, an emergency stop. And sometimes I may have to get off on the ground and work on some stuff a little bit before getting back on again.
Perfect. That's great stuff. And that can be applied to so many different situations, because even horses who are pretty level-headed have those moments and times and circumstances where they're fine as long as you are 100% of their focus. But the moment that you give them the opportunity to go, ooh, what's out there? That, you know, they get a little snorty. So it's nice to have those exercises in your toolkit for when you need them.
Yes, exactly.
There we go. Well, that's awesome. So we are going to take a quick break for one of our awesome sponsors. We can't do these shows without them. And when we come back, we're going to have our first listener question.
Easy, effective, and eco-friendly fly control starts with Fly Predators. Fly Predators are the organic, natural way to dramatically minimize your fly problem. Learn more about Fly Predators and other Spalding Labs fly control solutions at spalding.labs.com.
So, Mary, what is our first listener question?
It is from Debbie, and she has a question about trailer loading. So, I'm going to paraphrase this a little bit, but Debbie has tried everything, all the suggestions to get her horse to load in the trailer. Pirelli circles, tapping the hip with the whip to annoy, driving lead with the release of pressure if he leans forward, butt rope, a few other cowboy suggestions. Apparently the horse has a problem with running backwards fast enough to jerk a lead rope away. Ooh, that's, now I'm going to say that's serious. That's one of the most serious problems you can have on the ground. Riding is fine. And once he's in the trailer, he's okay. He backs out very well. But now we can't get close to the trailer. Yes, so everything is okay with the trailer. It's a nice trailer, good ventilation. Okay, so pretty much we have a horse that seriously does not want to get in the trailer. Okay, so one of the red flags that I'm spotting here is this horse that runs backwards fast enough to jerk the lead rope away. You never want to put yourself and your horse in a situation where that's going to happen, because the more times you allow that to happen, the more that's going to get ingrained in his brain. And
that rehearse the behavior, right? Yeah.
Yes. And you'll have a horse that once they learn, oh, I can just get away from my person, then anytime the most minor inconvenience happens, he's just going to do that instead of thinking his way through the situation. So you may have to start one. I would get into a good groundwork program before even thinking of the trailer. If you drop this horse on my doorstep and said, the only thing I want you to work on is trailer loading, I probably wouldn't get anywhere near a trailer for at least a week. Because this horse is telling me that he needs help managing his feet. You need to really get on point with being able to control that horse's feet on the ground in a calm manner. For this horse, trailer loading is like the Super Bowl. It's the pinnacle of what you can do with him. And so I'm not going to start there, right, on the most scariest important thing that I need to work on. I'm going to go back to the arena and work on my groundwork. So Debbie says, I'm 75 and not a trainer. Unfortunately, if you have a horse, you are his trainer. So anytime your hand is on the lead rope, you are training that horse. Sometimes you might be training him what not to do. So if you feel like it's an issue of, man, I'm just not in the position to be able to manage all of this stuff, hire a trainer to help you work through this. It's not worth getting hurt or having bad explosive behaviors happen over and over and over again. So you may have to send them to someone or hire someone to come and actually help you with this. If you're wanting to do it on your own, then I would find a very good groundwork program to invest in and learn. So I worked for a trainer who could get any creature on a trailer. I don't care what the horse was doing. This guy could get the horse on the trailer. And he did lots of demos all over the country on getting tough to load horses on the trailer. And the thing is, a lot of people would see what he was doing, which involved a lot of quote unquote Pirelli circles. So when you see some of these trainers do these demos, they're moving the horse in a lot of circles and they are tapping him with a whip or a stick or whatever to help the horse, you know, to direct the horse's movement. And I would have people come up to me, the assistant trainer, and ask questions about it when they couldn't talk to the main guy. And they say, well, I tried all those circles you did, but they didn't work. And what I'd have to explain over and over and over again is it's not just doing circles. Circles are not what got that horse on the trailer. It's very simple of, when you're not on the trailer, we're going to work your feet. And it's not even about like, you know, oh, I'm going to punish you outside of the trailer and reward you in the trailer. That can work, but your timing has to be impeccable. It's about, let's get control of your feet and let's get control of your feet around the trailer. And anytime you smell like you're going to acknowledge the trailer or go forward to the trailer, then I'm going to release. It's not the circles that get the horse on the trailer. It's the release. So if I've had to load a lot of horses like this, like in an emergency, like we're at the show, we need to go home. It's getting dark out. So I can get just about anything on the trailer in an emergency. So when I get a horse like this, what usually happens is we might start near the trailer. Cause like I said, it's usually an emergency. We're in the parking lot. The storm clouds are rolling in. So I'm going to try and get him on the trailer. And that horse may run backwards to the end of the parking lot and refuse to load. What most people do in that situation is the horse runs all the way backwards, you know, about a football field length away. And as soon as the horse gets far enough away to where they're back under control again, the owner just kind of goes, ah, and they inadvertently give the horse a huge release for having run backwards. And then they try to lead the horse back up to the trailer. So in that horse's mind, he said, ooh, when I ran 100 miles away, I got a little bit of relief. So I'm just going to keep doing that until my owner cries and gives up. So what I do, if a horse is running backwards, I keep their head facing me and I go with them because I'm not going to be able to hold them in place. They weigh 1,000 pounds. It's not going to work. So I'm going to go with them. And as soon as we get to where the horses kind of come back down to earth again, I'm working on their feet. I'm not punishing them because that horse is already like above threshold. So like terrorizing them is really not going to help that much. But I am going to say, okay, you need to, let's work on going forward again. And I don't even acknowledge the trailer. If you want to work all the way out here, then we'll work out here. So the horse learns that no matter where he goes, we still got to work through this. You're not getting relief out here. I'm going to be calm but firm with you. And I'm going to say, okay, we need to work on going forward again. And I need to make sure I can get you stopped if you run forward. So I do a lot of sending the horse past me. So I work on getting them to go forward. As soon as they pass me, yield the hindquarters and then go the other way forward. As soon as they go past me, yield the hindquarters the other way. Some people call this the sending exercise. Pirelli calls this the squeeze game. Almost every clinician I know has a version of this. So you can find videos online if you're having trouble visualizing what I'm saying. So I'll do this several times until the horse kind of comes back to earth and is listening. And then what I do is I keep doing this exercise, but I start taking steps toward the trailer. But I'm just sending the horse past, yielding the hindquarters. I take another step forward, send the horse past, yield the hindquarters. I take another step forward. Now, it might take 5 minutes, 10 minutes, 20 minutes, half an hour, but eventually we'll get near the trailer again. Now, what my predator mind might be tempted to do is, oh my gosh, we're so close to the trailer. I'm going to shove that horse on right now before he has a chance to run away again. What I actually do is I get my horse within an acceptable distance of the trailer where I think he's still going to be thinking and with me, not wanting to run backwards. And I'm going to keep gently sending him back and forth and back and forth. And when I feel him calm down and relax even a little bit, or, you know, we've made like some sort of breakthrough and we're in the vicinity of the trailer again, what I do is I release. I don't let go of the rope, but I take a big release, loosen the rope, and then I walk the horse away from the trailer. I'm like, that's all I was looking for, was just for you to keep your head on straight. And guess what? When you're paying attention and you're working with me instead of against me, I'm going to give you the relief you're so desperately looking for. And I'm going to take him over and I'm going to graze him somewhere for a bit. And I will do this even if it's a situation where it's like, we got to get on the trailer right now. I've loaded a lot of horses at the end of clinics. At the end of the day at clinics where the horse is like, I'm not wanting to get on and everyone's tired and we want to go home, I will still act like I have all the time in the world. And I'll take the horse away from the trailer, let him have a breath, because that's what the horse is looking for. He just needs relief. And I'll show him when we get relief. So for some horses, it's a win if I can get within 50 feet of the trailer. So I'm guessing this horse is one of those where getting in the trailer is just so unfathomable for this horse. So maybe when I started the lesson, I couldn't get him within, 20 feet of the trailer. And I keep working on him all around the trailer, just working on my groundwork. You know, let's get him to go forwards and backwards and left and right and listening and calm. And anytime he does those things well for me, and he does them a little bit closer to the trailer than we were before, big release. If I have days to work on this is even better. Maybe I put him away for the day. And only when he is calm and listening all around the trailer, all around the sides, front, back of the trailer, then will I start thinking about getting him on the trailer. So this horse sounds like he's got a huge threshold of, I don't want to go anywhere near that thing. That's what you've got to overcome first. You can't get him on the trailer if he's terrified within 50 feet of the trailer. You just can't. So that's what you need to work on first, is getting him comfortable around the trailer, making sure you have really good control of the feet. If he is pulling that lead rope away from you consistently, what I do in that case is like, okay, screw the trailer. Let's go back to the arena and make sure that's not going to happen. And then we'll start working our way back to the trailer again.
Yeah. Trailer loading, another one of those, especially when the horse has gotten to that point where as soon as they see the trailer, they're already over threshold, that it gets so complex because you have to go back. So what for the human, we have to go back so many steps. Having gone through that with Nigel, it was a case of if he saw the ramp down, he wouldn't get within 50 feet of it. We really had to back up many, 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 many steps. But I think also, and this applies to so many aspects of horsemanship, very few of us have the ability to work with well-trained horses on a regular basis, mm-hmm. while also being observed by people who make well-trained horses. Mm-hmm. But for someone who is really struggling with a horse who's not loading, being able to work with a trainer, even if you're going to that trainer that you know their program and you trust it, go to their facility if they can't come to you and ask for a trailer loading lesson with one of their horses, so that you can work on your technique a little bit, develop your eye so you can recognize the horse's state of mind. Because I'm discovering, as my groundwork skills have always been much, much more elementary than my riding skills, that I need to continue to hone my observational skills. The horse gives me so many signals that things are either going well or poorly that I'm not recognizing. That can really go a long, long, long way when you're working at home to learn those skills. Even if all you're doing is go to the trainer, I need some trailer loading lessons with a horse that does know how to load reasonably well, and you can watch me so I know what I'm doing right, because you might think you're asking the horse to go past you when your cues, your body language, are in fact telling him something very different. Well, training process is not going to go well if your body language is telling the horse something you don't think you're telling them.
Yes. And one, you know, like I said, there's a million ways to skin a cat. Everyone has their favorite way of trailer loading. If you are not a trainer, maybe you don't have access to a trainer and you just don't know where to start. My biggest tip for you is, yeah, it's important to know the exercises, but it's not about the exercise so much as it's about where the horse finds relief. So if you're not sure what to do, you know, watch your horse. And if he is, simple rule, if he's doing something you like, that's when you can release. So, you know, if you're working on your horse and all of a sudden he calms down and he relaxes, give him a little relief. You create more of those experiences of you being the one to release the horse when he's doing well. You are going to get closer and closer to your goal, even if you don't know the exercises perfectly.
There you go. You got to start somewhere, right?
Yes.
Yes. Dun, dun, dun. Excellent question. Debbie, we're going to take another quick break from one of our important sponsors. And when we come back, we're going to do another question.
Want to reach a passionate, engaged audience of horse lovers? The Horse Radio Network, with thousands of listeners worldwide, offers unique sponsorship opportunities to connect your brand with horse owners, riders, and enthusiasts. Over 90% of our listeners have bought a product from a HRN ad in the past year. Partner with HRN and take your brand to the next level. Visit www.horseradionetwork.com/advertise today.
All righty, who's going to be next?
Okay, we have a question from Heather.
And all right, Heather, what do you need to know?
Yes, this is a really good one. How to work with a horse who doesn't like people behind her? She's fine with dogs, cats, other horses, riders on other horses behind her, and giant teddy bears in the saddle. I wonder if that has been an experience. I've also done the giant teddy bear trick. It's just humans. So yes, this is definitely something you want to address, because I have found that if a horse doesn't like someone's presence behind them, they can be a little cagey when you ride them, because it's kind of similar circumstances where the horse just, you know, they don't like feeling that presence behind their eyes and ears. It's very scary for them. And a lot of Mustangs I found deal with this. They feel extremely vulnerable when you're behind them. They're fine facing you, because that way they can keep an eye on you more easily. But you get behind them and they're like, what are you doing back there? So I like to, there's a lot of million different ways you can work on this, but my favorite way is to address this in the round pen. So what I like to do is get some round pen exercises done, like the very basics where you can send your horse forward and around you and you can get them to face up or join up to you. And again, this is, a lot of people have different ways to accomplish this. I know Monty Roberts is like the king of this, but I would do your research on some round pen exercises to where you can send your horse forward and you can get him to hook onto you. Once you have that, then you can work on, there's my favorite little groundwork book. It's a very thin red groundwork book by Buck Brandeman, and the title of it is Groundwork. So, you know, very good on the marketing there. And it's got black and white photos in it. And there's an exercise toward the end where he is driving the horse from the ground in the round pen, but not, it's like invisible long lines is what I call it. And I think he might call it that too. So how you start this, I'm going to try and explain this, is you get the horse to hook onto you. And then I usually go up to them and rub on their face and love them and everything. And then I practice by driving the horse's shoulders away from me. So I push the horse's shoulders away. And as soon as the horse turns away, I get back in front of their eye and catch their eye and get them to face me again. And I do this on both sides. So you're going to drive the horse's shoulder away and then step in front of their eye, get them to face you again. And just practice that over and over. Drive them away, catch them, bring them back. And I'm doing this all without a lead rope on me. So drive them away, step in front, catch them, bring them back. Once I do that, I have the basics to be able to drive them from behind. So then what I will do, instead of standing in the middle of the round pen and directing the horse around, I will walk behind them just like another horse might. So if you ever look at wild horses, whenever there's a herd of wild horses with their stallion and up over the hill, another band of horses comes and there's another stallion. Sometimes that other stallion will be like, ooh, that guy has a lot of mares. I think I want them. And so the horses might have to fight over the mares, but before that happens, they do all of this positioning and posturing. It's really cool to watch. So the other stallion will go, oh, that guy wants my mares. So he's going to start directing his mares and getting them to move where he wants them to move. And what he does is he puts his head low to the ground and he does this thing called snaking, where he gets behind his mares at a walk and he drives them where he wants them to go. So for a lot of horses that are really scared of you behind them, sometimes it's because they feel insecure. They feel like, oh, this person is trying to dominate me. And I don't know if I want to give in to them just yet. So I will do this exercise in the round pen, which is very similar to how another horse would move them. So, you know, horses, when they're trying to get other horses to follow them, they're not like running in front of them going, everybody follow me. They'll drive them where they want them to go. So anywho, I will walk behind that horse and just gently, and I don't use, unless the horse is really kind of dull and quiet, I don't use like a flag or anything. I'm usually just using my body language. And I push them forward. Now, if a horse is scared with people behind, a lot of times they will run forward and away. And if that happens, I will step in front, catch their eye, and do it again. I'll just do this over and over until I can walk behind that horse and drive them forward. So once I get the horse to where I'm on the rail, they're on the rail, I'm walking behind them and gently pushing them forward, and they're not running forward, I can actually start steering where they go. So if I want, let's say we're going around the round pen to the left, and I want to turn that horse into the middle of the round pen, I will place myself in view of that horse's right eye and it'll turn them to the left. And then if I switch positions and get to where that horse sees me out of their left eye, they'll go to the right. Anytime I want them to hook back onto me, I will just keep walking out to the side, further and further and further to the side until that horse looks at me. And then I will walk backwards and away from that horse to get him to draw toward me. So this can be kind of hard to visualize. So like, you know, it explains it in the book and I think in one of his DVDs, but it's just another way to manage your horse's feet. And at the same time, you're desensitizing them to you walking behind them, teaching the horse. So this is invisible long lines is what I call this. And it's low risk because if the horse gets scared and running away, it's not like you are hooked to him with a surcingle and 2 30-foot long lines and you get all tangled up and everything. But teaching them to long line in earnest also is really helpful. It's a great precursor to getting on the horse. If I can long line him, it's much more similar to riding than me walking beside him and leading him.
Perfect. I've never dealt with that kind of a problem before. Those are really interesting insights. So let us know how it's going with that, Heather. We want to know.
Okay. Ooh, okay. This is an old one from 2025. It comes from Kayla. And it is, I would like to know what tricks you have for practicing softness. Any tips for practicing softness on the ground and under saddle? I have so many tips. And it's one of my favorite things to work on. So oftentimes when people talk about softness, and when I first started training, what I thought of softness was softness in my hands. Anything, you know, I could gather the horse in my reins and they felt like butter. And a lot of people work on this problem backwards because you want the horse soft in the face. So of course we're going to work on their face. And if they're not soft on my hands, maybe I'll get just a little bit more bit or maybe some draw reins or German Martingale or this, that, the other. And I'm going to try to really soften that horse's face. There's no problem with using different equipment, but when you are solely focused on what they feel like in your hands, again, you're working on the problem backwards. To me, softness comes from a horse that has softness in their feet and then in their body. And then the last thing that happens is they soften their face. I don't work very much on getting them soft with my hands anymore. I work on those feet because, and the reason why, if a horse's feet, if you don't have excellent control of their feet, they can just kind of throw their body anywhere they like. They can bow their shoulder out. They can get behind the bridle. They can get ahead of the bridle. They can maybe not want to turn left very well or drop their shoulder to the right very well. So if any of those things are happening, you don't have that straightness in their body, that suppleness in their body, their face is going to be tough. They're going to be hard mouth, so to speak. And horses really aren't hard mouth. They get hard in the body and hard with the feet. So the other thing is their mind. If a horse is really upset and agitated, the last thing he wants to do is be soft. He wants to brace and get ready to run. So if I have a horse that's dealing with that, I need to work less on like trying to soften him up and more on, let's get your brain back down to earth. And once I have a horse that's relaxed, focused, and soft in the feet, the body follows and then the face follows. So some things that you can do for that are some bull groundwork and riding exercises where I break the horse down into their different body parts, hips, shoulders, rib cage, neck, head and neck, pole. I probably missed something there, but and I work on exercises that will get all of those body parts soft and supple. So I'll work on getting the hindquarters to where I can easily move that hindquarters left and right. And I'll practice that until the horse does it easily on a really light cue. Same with the shoulders, same with the rib cage. I'll teach that horse to give their head and neck laterally left and then right. I'll teach that horse to back away from the bridle. All of those things, once they happen and you get that really great control through their feet and their body, that horse will be soft. That's just like your final result of that happening. So in the beginning, you know, back to Buck Brannaman, he calls it riding the horse in your rectangle. When I start a colt, I'm trying to keep them in this imaginary rectangle. And a lot of times the rectangle in the beginning is the size of my arena. Like if we can stay in the arena and in one piece, we're doing pretty good. But as they progress, that rectangle is going to get smaller and smaller and smaller until it just wraps nice and tightly around my horse and I. And where no matter where I put that rectangle, if I want to put it 3 feet to the side, that horse always finds himself back in that rectangle. If I want to put the rectangle forward, I should be easily be able to get the horse to move forward. If I want to put the rectangle behind us and get us back, the horse should easily be able to move back, and so on and so forth. And once that horse realizes that being in that rectangle is the best place, because how am I going to let him know it's the best place? I release him every time. I soften myself every time he finds himself there. So sometimes that involves pitching the reins away completely. Sometimes it involves just, oh, I'm going to open my fingers a little bit and let him know. And I'm going to relax my cues and take my legs off of him a little bit and let him know where you are right now. That's where I want you to be. So again, like with the trailer loading, it's not the special exercises we do that teach us so much as the release. Where am I going to release? And if you don't know where to release, just think, do I like what my horse is doing right now? And if I do, okay, I'm going to reward that. So the release is what teaches.
There we go. Dun, dun, dun. I'm going to take another quick break, our final break of the day for one of our important sponsors. And when we come back, we're going to do our final question of the day. Whee!
You can enjoy your favorite equine videos all in one place with Ride TV, the ultimate equine streaming platform. The newly relaunched Ride TV has all the series you love, like Rockstar Vets and Mini Horses, plus top-tier training videos and event footage from BarrelRacing.com and Horse and Rider On Demand. Whether you're ready to relax with your favorite series, binge-watch competition footage, or train with a world champion, subscribe to Ride TV today for only $19.99 to see where your ride takes you. Visit RideTVGo.tv to subscribe.
What is our final question of the day?
Okay, I may have answered this question before, but I think it's a good one to repeat. And it's from Christy. And she says, my pony doesn't like his hind legs, back legs touched, or his hind end touched by hand. He's fine with sticks, ropes, but when I try to touch him with my hands, he gets agitated. Okay, so I like, Christy, that you have started with sticks and ropes, and why we might do that for, in case anyone is unaware, is because if I touch his back with like maybe a good long whip, or I throw the rope back there and the pony loses his mind and kicks to the moon, that stick's probably not going to get hurt, but I might. So great job, like getting him prepped with something that can take a little bit of damage rather than your own body. So usually with a horse like this, just like the trailer loading horse, I will find that horse has a much bigger threshold than I anticipated. I don't think Christy is doing this, but oftentimes when someone says my horse won't pick up their feet, they try to solve the problem by going right to that horse's fetlock and picking up the foot. But that horse may not like you touching his rib cage, and because that's how big his, like, don't touch me bubble has gotten.
Yeah, and if that bubble's very big.
Yes. Sometimes in the case of a Mustang, they're like, I don't like you being in the round pen with me. So I'm going to work on that before I get to the feet. So you need to find where that threshold is. And sometimes if it's the back feet, sometimes I'll start by their shoulder and I'll stand by their shoulder and I'll just start doing approach and retreat. So I like to rub the horse on the shoulder. And then in that shoulder, I'll find a place where that horse is like, I'm fine with you touching me here. And that's going to be my retreat zone. That's the area of their body I will retreat back to every time. So then I'll move my hand further down. Okay, let's go across your back. And then I'll go back to the shoulder. Okay, the back was okay. So I go back to the back. Okay, let's go up over your rump and then back to the shoulder. So I will look for subtle signs, because the horses will give them to you. That's the horse is saying, I don't really like you there. So let's say I get up over the horse's rump and or horse's ears suddenly flick back toward me, and maybe they start kind of shifting back and forth a little bit. So that tells me, okay, this is my starting point, not the foot. So I'm guessing this pony probably has an issue like that. So my goal is I put the touching the feet on the shelf. And I'll go, okay, you don't like me touching you over the hip. So that's my focus. I'm going to get to where you are so comfortable with that it is the most boring thing in the world for you. I may never get a horse that likes to be touched back there, but I can get one that tolerates it and feels safe when I'm back there. We all have our own quirks and stuff. I don't particularly like hugs, but I have been socialized and I can accept hugs and give hugs when needed. It's just not my thing. So, it's okay if my horse has areas where they're like, eh, I don't really like you when you pet my face, but I'm still going to get them to accept it. So anyway, I'm going to go to the hip and I'm going to stay there it's an area where the horse doesn't want to run away or kick out or anything, but you can sense the uncomfort is there. So I'm going to stay in that uncomfort zone until I see a change. Maybe the horse relaxes back down again. They relax their ears. They relax their eyes. Maybe they look and chew. Once they do that, I will retreat away back to the safe zone and let them know, hey, if you tolerate that, I'm going to get out of your space. And then I'll work my way back down to the hip. And maybe they're fine with the hip now. So as soon as they're fine with that, I'll work in an inch forward from that place and then go all the way back and retreat. Once I get a horse that's getting pretty good at this, I won't retreat all the way back to the shoulder. I'll retreat back maybe to their back, or, you know, I'll just retreat back a little bit so you don't have to go back and forth so much. And you work your way down, so on and so forth. I'm going to do the hip. I'm going to do, I don't know what that body part is. Is it the Gaskin? I'm really bad with anatomy. From the area from the hip to the hock, I'm going to work on that. And then I'm going to, you know, keep retreating back. And then I'm going to work past the hock and down and just keep working. And I'm going to get my goal before I even pick up that horse's back foot is I want to be able to rub that horse's back leg inside and out with both hands easily without him moving or becoming agitated. Once I get there, then I can start thinking about touching or picking up the back feet.
Very interesting. And you touched on something as you went along there. You'll occasionally have a horse that doesn't like their face rubbed and stuff. You've trained a lot of different horses over the years. How common is it that you come across one who has what seems to be a hardwired aversion to having their face petted? Because that's the place we all tend to go to, that whole rubbing between the eyes thing. And some, like Scooter, for example, doesn't like his muzzle touched, despite, or even between his eyes, despite the fact that he chews on everything. Don't you touch my face. I can do my own rubbing. Is that something that you come across a lot? Rarely?
Yeah, I think every horse has an area that they're like, well, this doesn't really do it for me. Of course, I train my horses to accept everywhere because I need to get a bridle on them and I need to do that. Like Remy, for instance, he doesn't dislike being rubbed on the face, but it doesn't really do anything for him. It's not particularly rewarding for him. He's just like, okay, whatever. But he does love the front of his neck being scratched. So if I'm ever petting or scratching for a reward, I make it my mission to know where every one of my horses likes to be rubbed and scratched. And so anytime I want to reward them, instead of doing what I think is going to be rewarding, which is like a face pet, I'm going to find, you know, oh, this horse really likes when I scratch above his withers or the front of his neck or, you know, or on his chest. And some horses just love having their face pet. So I just make it known of, you don't really like this too much. This is what you actually like. While, again, it is important, it's good animal husbandry practice to get my horse to where I need to be able to touch every body part because maybe I need to doctor that area. I also, you know, I just understand that that's not really your thing.
Yeah, that I think that's an important distinction that we need to make. And I think it probably applies more even when we're in the saddle than when we're doing groundwork. If your horse loves to have his ears scratched, which I've just recently discovered, James loves his ears scratched. When we're taking a break and I want to give him a reward, I reach up there and I scratch his ears because he thinks that's the best. It would never occur to me in my experience in the universe to reach up and scratch a horse's ears while I'm riding them. I mean, I can touch them because, again, it's an important husbandry thing to be able to do that sort of stuff. But as a reward, that's not my go-to. But I discovered quite by accident that he thinks it's awesome. So I've added that to my toolbox. So as you're going through this learning process with the horse that you have, you're going to maybe discover places that he really loves to be touched and scratched and rubbed. And you can add those to your toolbox on the reward side of your training program.
Yes, there's a great quote from really good clicker trainer, Alexandra Curlin. I've talked about her before, but she says, every horse needs their own primate. And what that means, typically when we talk about prey and predator, us humans tend to think of ourselves as like a lone wolf. You know, I'm a majestic wolf. It's like, no, we're apes pretty much. I mean, you know, that's what we do. And what apes do is they like to pick nits off of other apes, and they groom each other. And horses, they don't have opposable thumbs or fingers. And so sometimes they really, when you show them, hey, my Zonkey, she loves the inside of her ear scratch because she doesn't have the ability to do it herself, and she doesn't have another creature.
Nope.
Yeah. So I'm going to be her creature that does that for her. And it's this little, you know, you scratch my back, I scratch yours type of thing. So yeah, a lot of horses, you know, love when we can get to those itchy places they can't quite reach.
There we go. Again, excellent stuff today. If you're wondering how you can submit a question to Mary or any of the other hosts who answer questions on their shows on Horse Radio Network, you have to be an auditor. And to become an auditor, you're going to go to patreon.com/horseradionetwork. And those questions get submitted when we ask for them, or just spontaneously on your own. And all of the donations that go through Patreon help support Horse Radio Network hosts like Mary. So you can do that. You can either do it by going to patreon.com/horseradionetwork, or we also have a link on the Horse Radio Network page. It moves around depending on how often we update the page. Look for it. It's there. Or if all else fails, just email Jennifer at Horse Radio Network and I can show you where it's at. But anywho, Mary, you are fixing to go to another horse show. So you're going to be out and about. Where's the horse show going to be this time? What state?
It is in Texas, in Bryan, Texas, which is near Texas A&M.
There we go. And for folks who want to follow your adventures online, check out your artwork, hire you to do a clinic, ask if you can train their horse, etc., how do they do that?
You can find me at Mary Chris Kitzmiller Horsemanship on Facebook for the artwork and such. We are Troublemaker Trading Company, also on Facebook.
Dun, dun, dun. Thanks again. And we will be back here again next month on the first Thursday.
All right. See you then.